Welcome. My name is Justyna Galan and I'm here to guide you through the city. You're standing on a hill in front of the Lublin Castle. I want to show you Lublin. Not the whole of it, of course. I want to take you on an hourly walk and show you the main attractions of the city. I don't want to show you only the traditional monuments, because for people who choose this city, Lublin is a state of mind. Let's go to the castle courtyard, pass through, stand next to the bars. Some people describing Lublin say that this is the most beautiful city in Asia. Others call it the gate to the east, Jerusalem of the Polish kingdom. For others, Lublin means Majdanek. Some recall that after the war it was the Polish capital of communism and at the same time the place which initiated its fall. Some see Lublin as a student city, others believe it to be a provincial town in a state of decline, the capital city of the poorest region of the European Union. There is also an increasing group of people who believe that in a few years' time, Lublin will be the European capital of culture. We shall pass along the shortest possible route, from the castle, through the streets, Grodzka, Krakowskie Przedmieście, Aleje Racławickie, up to the campus. We shall see how it all started and where it led to. And at the moment, let us remain on the courtyard. Go to the bars, stand there. On your way, some facts and figures about Lublin. Lublin is one castle. It has been a capital of Poland twice. It has three rivers, five universities, including one university of technology, five radio stations, six parks, seven hills like in Rome, eight trolleybus lines. I shall repeat, trolleybus, as there are far more bus lines. 8 is also the average number of degrees of annual air temperature. Only 9 cities in Poland are larger than Lublin. There are at least 10 museums, and Lublin is one of the 16 Polish voivodeship capitals. Inhabitants can join one of the 17 choirs. It has 27 districts, 400,000 inhabitants, one-fourth are students. First reference to Lublin dates back more than 800 years. That's it for now. We are reaching the end of the courtyard. Stand by the bars. You may see a fragment of Lublin's panorama from here. And now look to the right. A building of red brick on the right side is a symbol of the city, the Holy Trinity Chapel. Lubelszczyzna region has always marked the Polish-Ruthenian borderline. The chapel is a collection of the Gothic Western architecture and Byzantine Empire Eastern murals, covering all walls and the vault inside. Now slowly walk through the courtyard and take a careful look around, stand in front of the castle. It is 1416. King Władysław Jagiełło brings a group of artists from the east to the castle built by his predecessors. The artists are to decorate the empty chapel with paintings. Each of them represents a different school and has different experience. 3 seasons later, the work is completed. The prayers looking at the polychromes may observe artistic influences from St. Athos Mountain, Serbia or Kiev, the whole Orthodox Europe. If during our walk you carefully inspect the city, you will see that the motif of angels from the chapel appears in many other places, on posters, on buses, in graffiti paintings. If you ever have a minute, you have to visit the chapel. Today, you won't have time to do it. The magnificent turret on the left side, correctly called the keep, is another characteristic monument of Lublin towering over the Lublin Castle. Look through its windows and you will see how thick the walls are. The walls of the turret, the keep, are almost 3.5 meters thick. Let's go inside. This building, constructed in the 13th century, had not only a defensive but also a residential purpose. Pay attention to the fact that the chapel and the turret greatly differ from the rest of the castle. The old castle was destroyed as a result of many wars that had ravaged Lublin in the course of centuries. The castle that you see has never been inhabited by princesses or knights, but it was divided into prison wards. In the 19th century, Lublin belonged to the Russian Empire. Authorities decided to rebuild the castle to serve as a place to detain political prisoners. For 150 years, prisoners of various systems had been detained here. Polish insurgents, members of resistance movements in the times of the Nazi rule and Stalin's authority. The cellar was the place of execution. Now, the castle is a museum. We shall now leave the castle. You will see a beautiful panorama of the city. Stand there for a moment. Lublin Castle is the most characteristic element of Lublin, especially for tourists. Most tourists visiting the city take pictures at this point. They are often unaware of the tragic history of the place. When you leave the castle, pay attention to the information plaques hanging there. Most inform you about the history of the castle as a prison. You are standing in front of the castle. Turn away. Now turn right. Immediately behind the castle, you will see a steep street leading down. Go straight. Stop at the ruins of grey stone. These disintegrating walls you shall see in a moment are remnants of the so-called quadrangular Jewish tower from the 14th century. Once it was a part of the castle's defensive walls. It owes its name to the fact that it used to be very close to the Jewish town. Its official name was Kazimierzowska Turret, from the name of a Polish king, Kazimierz the Great, who greatly contributed to the development of the Polish Empire and even inspired a Polish saying, "He found Poland made of wood and left it made of stone." Some of the walls may be seen on the right. Stop next to them. Look around. Below you can see a white tower of an Orthodox church behind a busy two-lane motorway. You already know that the region of Lubelszczyzna had always been a Polish-Ruthenian border. In fact, according to some linguists, the name of the city, Lublin, is of Ruthenian origin. Close vicinity of Ruthenian lands make Lublin an important commercial center. Ruthenian merchants used to come here, and over time they established a permanent Ruthenian colony. One of the oldest streets of the city is called Ruska, which means Ruthenian, and is probably a remnant of a district inhabited by the Ruthenian population. We know that the local Ruthenians had their Orthodox church in Lublin as early as the 14th century. The building which you see was built in the first half of the 17th century. It is one of the oldest brick Orthodox churches in Poland. Now it is one of the two Orthodox churches in Lublin and is the seat of the Archbishop of the Lublin Helm Diocese. The church had been one of three most important churches in this region for years. Today only 150 families attended. The green hill on the right side from the church, behind a petrol station Statoil, is a Jewish cemetery. It is difficult to imagine, but all that you can see below the castle hill, a street, a bus station, is the area of the former Jewish district. This is from where funeral hearses were led to the cemetery. Directly below the place where you stand, there was the great synagogue, the pride of all inhabitants of Lublin, that could accommodate more than 3,000 people. It was destroyed during the war and its ruins were pulled down after the war ended. If we could go down now with shovels and start digging in the asphalt, we would unearth the floor of the synagogue. Now go back to the castle and stand on the top of the steps between the courtyard and the castle. When presenting the history of Lublin, one cannot forget to mention its Jewish past. The title Jerusalem of the Polish Kingdom obliges. There were periods in the late 19th century when half of the city's inhabitants were Jews. We shall go towards the steps. In Lublin, there was one of the most important and most respected European Talmudic schools. Jewish families sent their sons to the school to get proper education. One of the yeshiva's founders in the 16th century was Solomon Luria Maharshal. You may see his tombstone on the Jewish cemetery. Maharshal's accomplishments were so great that the great synagogue was called with his name, Maharshal Synagogue, Maharshal Shul in Yiddish. The yeshiva was destroyed in one of many invasions of foreign armies in the 17th century. In the 1920s, it was decided, referring to tradition, that the new yeshiva will be built, Chachmei Lublin. It was opened in 1930 and it operated for 9 years until the outbreak of the war. The building survived the war. Later, the medical university was located there. Currently, the building belongs to the Jewish community. Now we reached the top of the monumental steps. Stop and take a look. Below, you see an oval square. Go down several steps, but do not go all the way down. stop at the nearest food post. On the right-hand side, you see a monument of a lion. This is Szeroka Street 28, the home of Jakub Itzhak Horowitz. He was called the seer of Lublin, Lubliner, or simply Lublin. For many people, the word Lublin was tantamount to the seer. As the nickname indicates, he had the gift of clairvoyance. Horowitz was widely known all around Poland. People from all walks of life came to him asking for advice. Rumor has it that he saw not only what already took place, but also what was to happen. He was a tzaddik, the teacher of Lublin's Hasidic Jews. Hasidic Judaism is a mystical Judaic movement. I will tell you something about the tzaddik, and you turn left and go along a narrow street leading to a strand connected the castle with Grodzka Gate, which you may already see. We are now heading towards the gate. According to the Hasidic tradition, when Napoleon's troops marched in 1806 to the Polish territory, Napoleon Bonaparte sent a letter to the most prominent rabbis and tzaddiks asking for support of the Polish Jews. Just then, in Lublin, at Szeroka 28, there was a meeting of the three most important Hasidian leaders, Lubliner, Saint Judah from Przysucha, and Magid from Kozienice. The seer predicted that Napoleon would be defeated in Russia. But this is not all. The seer stated that Napoleon was the personification of Armelius, the symbol of the greatest evil in Judaism. He characterized his Russian campaign as a struggle between good and evil. Along with Napoleon's defeat in Russia, the Messianic Age was about to begin, the age of liberation of all Jews. In order for this to happen, people had to address the heavens together to promptly send the Messiah. This was to be done by the three tzaddiks. Now, stop for a while. Unfortunately, it was up to the heavens to decide when the Messiah should come. The brave three were severely punished for trying to meddle with someone else's matters. All three died in mysterious circumstances. The seer, who at the time was already severely ill, was found lying in the street one day. The legend says that two demons dragged him out of his bed and threw out through the window. Other people believe that he died in more ordinary circumstances. Intoxicated with alcohol, which he often consumed, fell out through the window. He died in 1815, the year of Napoleon's defeat. This is not the end of the tzaddik's history. Look carefully at the shape of the castle square. Some people believe that the oval represents the seer's eye, as if the tzaddik still observed the city. But this is not the end. Opposite to the castle, you can see 10 Renaissance tenement houses. The Renaissance? Nothing more delusive. They were all built to commemorate the 10th anniversary of Communist Poland in 1954. The same applies to the courtyard, the green space around the castle. Although it is hard to believe, a little bit more than 50 years ago, there was a town over here, a Jewish district, a town within the town. The Szeroka Street ran roughly through the middle of the present courtyard. Smaller streets were leading away from it. High tenement houses, wooden houses and stalls, shops and workshops, and the town hubbub. Let's go towards the gate. You need 10 pious Jews to say Kaddish, the prayer for the deceased. Some believe that these 10 tenement houses you've just seen symbolize the 10 pious Jews who pray for the city that does not exist any longer. The only thing left after more than 400 years of the Jewish presence is a street lamp. You will see it on the left side. When you come closer to the railing, you will notice that the street lamp is always lit. Before the war, every third inhabitant of Lublin was a Jew. Now, the Jewish community consists of about a dozen members. At this point, it is worth adding that, contrary to what's generally believed, most Lublin Jews did not die in Majdanek, but in Bełżec, a small place south of Lublin. Let's move on through Grodzka Street towards the old town. In a minute, we shall pass through Grodzka Gate. For over four centuries, the gate had marked the borderline of two worlds, the Christian and the Jewish. At the same time, it was the main route. The Christians followed this path when they went shopping and the Jews took it to do their business. Pay attention to these small barred windows in both sides of the gate. They are remnants of the so-called pre-dear stores. the prayer kneeler stalls. In the event of danger or riots, merchants closed the doors and sold their goods only through the window. In the gate, until the end of the Second World War, there were private apartments. At present, there is a municipal institution, Grodzka Gate, NN Theatre, an institution concerned with the history of Lublin. Go up Grodzka Street. Now, a few meters further, on the left, just by the square with the ruins of a former church, you will see a corner tenement house. There is a youth community centre in the building. Since the middle of the 19th century, there had been a shelter for the homeless children and elder Jews, the so-called Ochronka. It was founded by the town hall and the Jewish community and offered shelter, maintenance, clothes and education to children. From first-hand accounts, it is known that during the war, Jewish families left their children in Ochronka, believing that they would be safe over there. In the shelter, there were small babies, even 2 years old, and older children. It happened most likely at the end of March 1942, at the time when Jewish deportations to extermination camps began. A truck arrived. It stopped at the building. Several Nazi soldiers got out of the car. Children were loaded onto the trucks and transported to the outskirts of Lublin to a sand mine. There, they were all executed. The location of Ochronka in the old town is quite significant. It shows that despite the existence of the Jewish district, its boundaries were not rigid, at least not until the war began. Let's move on. On the left, we are passing some ruins. This is an exact reconstruction of foundations of the medieval Fara Church of St. Michael the Archangel, most likely the first brick temple in the eastern Poland, which was pulled down in the 19th century due to the risk of construction hazards. Now, this is an attractive place of meetings and concerts. Let's go up via Grodzka Street. Talking about the history of Lublin, one has to necessarily mention two moments significant for the history of Europe. Both took place in the same circumstances. In 1547, wandering printers from Prague, Isaac son of Chaim and Josef Jakar, obtained a permit to establish a Hebrew printing house, first in Lublin and one of the first ones in Poland. They founded it at Ulica Szeroka, Szeroka Street, in which the seer lived. Several years later, they were the first ones to publish the Siddur, the whole year prayer book in Hebrew. In 1554, Isaac, son of Chaim, died, but the next generation of Jewish printers continued the work of their fathers. They were granted an exclusive privilege by the Polish king to print and sell Hebrew books in the whole Polish kingdom. The most famous book printed by them in Lublin was the mystical Zohar book. The Book of Enlightenment is a medieval mystical treaty. Until the 20th century, only two unabridged issues of the book had been published. The 1623 edition was printed in Lublin. At the beginning of the 17th century, the most popular book in Yiddish was issued in Lublin for the first time, Leave and Look. It was a special book for Jewish women containing comments and study of the Torah. Several centuries later, Lublin again came to attention as an important place in the history of printing. In 1976, a student of art history of the Lublin Catholic University smuggled a small copier from the West. This was the first copier in Poland. Since then, Lublin has become the center of underground publishing houses. Papers and leaflets printed at home enraged the communist authorities. This is a good moment to move on to the contemporary history of the city. Before I do this, notice the market you're just passing by. In the middle, there is an edifice of Tribunał Koronny, the royal tribunal. Let me tell you a legend. Stand in front of the building for a moment. In the 16th and 17th centuries, a high court of justice was located here. If someone was not satisfied with a court decision, they could lodge an appeal to the tribunal and count on a positive outcome of the case. This was exactly what a certain widow was hoping for when she appealed in 1637 from the ruling of the municipal court. The case appeared simple. A rich nobleman rammed her house, plundered it, and set it on fire. The woman demanded compensation. However, The rich nobleman bribed the judges, and the sentence was passed in his favour. The woman did not give up. She appealed to the tribunal. She came to Lublin hoping for a fair sentence. Unfortunately, it turned out that the nobleman managed to bribe the judges here as well. Again, it was decided that the nobleman did not owe anything to the woman. She had no chance to recover the plundered property. Even a devil would pronounce a fairer sentence. The woman shouted in distress and left the tribunal with tears in her eyes. Let's go straight ahead in the direction of Brama Krakowska, Krakowska Gate, which you may see right now. Let's go back to the legend. In the evening that day, something strange happened. A beautiful, richly adorned carriage with exceptionally shapely horses stopped in front of the tribunal building. Smartly dressed gentlemen got out of the carriage. Their coats were adorned with precious stones and gold. Were it not for the fact that they had hooves instead of feet, they would not differ from ordinary people. They entered the tribunal. The case of the poor woman was listed again for a hearing. Witnesses were called. They testified. This time, in the presence of such unusual judges, nobody dared to lie. The sentence was passed in favour of the widow. The nobleman had to give back the stolen property and pay compensation for the damages he caused. To proclaim the validity of the sentence, the devil who pronounced it hit the table with his hand. It left a burnt trace on its top. You can see the devil's paw on your left in the logo of the restaurant you are just passing by. The table with the sign can be still seen in the castle. Let's enter the Krakowska Gate. While the devil pronounced the sentence, Christ on the cross hanging in the courtroom turned his head to the wall. He did not want to look at the devils pronouncing a sentence fairer than the one passed by people. The tribunal cross is hanging in one of the chapels in the Archcathedral. Go through Krakowska Gate and stop there. This medieval gate used to be a part of the city's fortifications. In front of the gate there used to be a moat and a bascule bridge. We are leaving the old town and its history behind. Now let us focus on more modern times that have strongly affected the city and its inhabitants. The yellow building on the right side is the town hall. Poland is known in the world thanks to two people, Pope John Paul II and Lech Wałęsa, the leader of the Solidarity Trade Union. Now let us focus on the Solidarity. The union's office was nearby. This peaceful movement that had a great impact on the history of the Central and Eastern Europe was inseparably connected with Lublin. Let's move further to the other side of the street and continue straight through the promenade until Litevsky Square. To understand the phenomenon of the Solidarity, we need to go back to the end of the Second World War. Poland was in the zone of influence of the Soviet Union. Poles, in spite of huge opposition, could not withstand the post-war division of the world determined by the victorious powers. Poland became a part of the Eastern Bloc. Stalin's regime replaced Hitler's regime. Polish communists brought from Moscow ruthlessly began to implement their rule. Lublin was unlucky to have been chosen as the city in which they proclaimed their rule. On the 22nd of July 1944, it became a temporary capital of communist Poland. This was the beginning of the system, the downfall of which, a few dozen years later, was again initiated by the inhabitants of this city. Communism relied on labor force, praised labor force, and served labor force. At least that was the assumption. In 1980, the same labor force decided that they've had enough. More than 35 years of the communist rule showed that a state could not be managed by the so-called central planning. One also could not build a society that had no rights and no freedom. One could not rule a country of 40 million people where all elections were falsified and the state was ruled by a single party. Such system had to fail. However, this was a long process. You could hardly buy anything in Poland. For example, people had to queue in a long line to get some toilet paper and they could not even be sure that they would eventually get it. The same applied to other also basic commodities, including food. Let us move on through the promenade. To publish a newspaper, a leaflet or a book, it was necessary to have the authorities' permit. Everything was subject to censorship. For this reason, as I have already mentioned, illegal underground publishing houses were created. Lublin, with its first copier in Poland, became the birthplace of these institutions. The history of communist Poland is the history of a struggle against the authority. Elites also opposed the system. Intellectuals published open letters to the authorities and then ended up in jail. Laborers also opposed the force, but their actions were bloodily suppressed by the communists. Students organized strikes on universities and they were expelled. 1980 and the Solidarity Movement brought about a major change. All groups joined the efforts. Over the whole summer of 1980, people in Poland organized strikes. Lublin, a former capital city of communism, was one of the first cities where workers said no. One group that joined the strike were the railmen. On the main station, one of the main railway junctions in Poland, they stopped all the trains. A wave of strikes extended to the whole country. As a result of these strikes organized by the Solidarity, in August 1980 in the shipyard in Gdańsk, 21 postulates were signed by the communists. The demands of the Solidarity movement included the right to strike, the freedom of expression, print, release of all political prisoners, ending repression for one's beliefs. There were also some other social postulates. The person to lead these strikes and the main person responsible for the signing of the postulates by the communists was Lech Wałęsa. Let us go straight. The trees you may see in front of you are the trees of Litevsky Square, where we are heading. The success of the Solidarity did not last long. After 16 months, the authorities, who felt that their control over the state diminished, introduced martial law. On December the 13th, 1981, almost all Solidarity leaders were arrested. Tanks appeared in the streets. The authorities started to monitor citizens' correspondence and telephone calls. The state's boundaries were closed. Any social activity was prohibited. Even television hosts had to wear uniforms. After the period of great hope for a change, called the Solidarity Carnival, society was shattered by the introduction of the martial law. People felt betrayed. For several years, it was much harder to persuade them to take any action. The greatest blow consisted in the fact that people responsible for the introduction of the martial law were Poles, people living in the same houses, often one's neighbors. This was an internal conflict, not a fight against external enemy. In spite of the dramatic situation, there were still people who wanted to act. The most important role was played by women. So far in the background, now after the leaders had been arrested, they were in charge of the underground life, issuing newspapers, books, organization of illegal meetings, not only political ones. All these activities were honed to perfection. Independent life also meant plays, concerts, and evenings with authors organized in private apartments. We are approaching Litevsky Square, which can be seen on the right. This is an extremely significant place for our history of Lublin, Poland, and this part of Europe. Let us go back in time and leave the story about Solidarity behind to see Lublin in a broader context. In the square, there are facilities which are directly related to the breakthrough moments in history of the city. In the 16th century, Poland faces a lot of problems. Among them, one is especially serious: the German Order of Teutonic Knights. The Teutonic Knights came to the Polish territories much earlier, and in the name of expansion of Christianity, they plundered and seized lands both in Poland and in Lithuania. The Union, popularly known as the Union of Lublin, was really a coalition of two states facing the same problem. Just before you enter Litevsky Square, between the trees you can see a black obelisk, the monument of the Polish-Lithuanian Union, sealed in 1569. Stop by the monument. As the union was sealed, Poland and Lithuania constituted the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth with a common king, same parliament, and foreign policy. The union also resulted in ethnic and religious tolerance and equal rights in both countries. In this place, there was a camp of the Lithuanian troops that arrived to sign the Act of Union more than 440 years ago, hence the name of the square, Plac Litevski, the Lithuanian Square. Let's move on and walk to the monument of a horse rider. Just behind the trees on the right, you can see a small palace painted in pink. Here in 1918, the temporary People's Government of the Republic of Poland was established. first government after 123 years of the state's non-existence. The program of the government proclaimed, among others, the equality of rights of all citizens, irrespective of origin, sex, faith and nationality, as well as freedom of conscience, press and expression. For this and for other reasons, it was considered as extremely progressive. The government did not, however, last long. Soon it had to hand its powers on to the Marshal Józef Piłsudski, the monument of whom we are approaching right now. This was an outstanding politician of the 1920s and 1930s who greatly contributed to the Polish independence gained in 1918. Although it is hard to believe now, the Great Orthodox Church used to be located in this square. It was built in 1873 and just after 50 years it was pulled down as the Russian army withdrew from Lublin. What's interesting, the bricks from the demolition were used in the construction of the soldiers' home for the Polish independent army. This institution was named after Józef Piłsudski. The monument standing here is new. In the communist times, in this spot, there stood a monument of a massive Soviet soldier with a flag which commemorated the Red Army. It is obvious that Lubliners were not happy to see the monument in the city. In their minds, it meant only one thing, the Soviet occupation. The monument often experienced acts of vandalism. It was regularly splattered with paint or ravaged. Until 1990 was the year of its final demolition. Let me add that the big tree in the middle of the square is called the Baobab by the inhabitants of Lublin. This is a favorite meeting spot. However, in fact, the tree has nothing to do with a baobab. It is an ordinary black poplar. Look around, find a Grand Hotel. This is the impressive building at the corner with a dial on the tower. Let's go there, let's cross the streets to stand in front of it. Now let me come back to my tale about the contemporary times. This square had been a stage for illegal demonstrations against the communists. Imagine white and red banners of the Solidarity confronted with the special units of the militia. Participants recall that during these demonstrations the tear gas was so heavily used that for several days after the riots the pigeons normally living in the square were unable to fly. Demonstrations were not the only form of resistance. Imagine Krakowskie Przedmieście, the city's main central street, completely impassable from 7:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. A massive crowd. During the martial law, first in Świdnik near Lublin, then in Lublin itself, at exactly the time when a propaganda TV news program Dziennik Telewizyjny was broadcast, people would leave their houses. This peculiar form of happening was a protest against the propagandist lies of the communist authorities. This method quickly became popular in other cities in Poland. After you pass the traffic lights, stop in front of the Grand Hotel. Another method was to place the TV sets in windows, screen facing outside. This way people objected against propaganda. But it was the music which really gave people the strength. One of the most popular songs was Mury, the Walls, by Jacek Kaczmarski. Listen to a fragment of the song. So far, I've told you about the years of communism in Poland, about demonstrations, beatings and detentions of political activists. Today, Lublin is not the city which it used to be back then, and contemporary Poland is far from the communist one. You don't have to believe me. You will see it for yourself when you look around. Even if you do not know the Poland of the past, trust me that the present Lublin has little in common with it. Let's go further along Krakowskie Przedmieście, the main street. One of the reasons for this change was the elections of June the 4th, 1989. These were partly democratic parliamentary elections. It was a breakthrough date, as the vast majority of society participating in the election supported the changes. On this day, Poland triumphed over the communist regime and gave the signal to other countries of the Soviet bloc to embark on the transition process. As a result of these elections, the opposition won all possible seats. Neither the communists nor the Solidarity expected such an outcome. During these elections, all candidates of the Solidarity had the same posters, large characteristic red logo, and below, a picture with Lech Wałęsa. The poster worked perfectly. There was no need to add anything more. Wałęsa was a symbol and a guarantee of quality. We shall now pass a corner tenement house with a bookstore. Let's pass it, turn left and stop at the barred gate. We are on Krakowskie Przedmieście 62. Come closer to the bars, near the palace that you can see in front of you. In 1989, on this backyard, in the garage on the left that you may see at the back, there was a registered office of Komitet Obywatelski, the Citizens' Committee. The committee was the electoral committee of the Solidarity. Such ordinary places all around Poland gathered people whose activity resulted in transformations in Poland and then throughout the Eastern Europe. Let's go further, straight along Krakowskie Przedmieście. Society, after years of lack of faith caused by the Solidarity's failure in the early 80s, again started to cherish the hope for a transformation. Thousands of people were involved in the electoral campaign. And in spite of lack of money, paper, few independent printing houses, Lublin was full of posters with symbols of the Solidarity. To a large extent, this was the effect of the efforts of independent anti-communist scouts who were helping in the elections from dusk till dawn. They stuck posters and assisted other people. I have already mentioned the underground printing houses. This time it will be a longer story. The communists did not tolerate any competition in proclaiming their obvious truths. People who saw reality in a manner different than the one imposed on society could not dream of having access to the media. For criticizing the party, one went to jail. However, society needed the freedom of expression. Initially, the means were quite simple. On pieces of paper in fine print, through the tracing paper in few copies, people rewrote short texts, essays, poems. They handed the copies to friends asking to do the same. However, this was a very time-consuming method, and the scope was also limited, and people wanted to read. Some tried to smuggle materials printed in Western publishing houses. However, this way was even less effective. It was difficult to carry more than one copy of a printed text forbidden by the communists. Later, these books obtained with such great effort began to circulate. The principle was as follows. One would get a book for a single night, to pass it to the next reader early in the morning. Eventually, in 1976, the first simple manual printing machine, a copier, was smuggled to Poland. It was brought to Lublin. One has to remember that at the time in Poland it was necessary to obtain an official permit to purchase a larger amount of paper for a typing machine, not to mention a professional printing press. Now let's go straight along Krakowskie Przedmieście. When first copiers appeared and the house method of printing developed, the revolution began. New underground printing houses and publishing houses were created. People printed materials in their houses, on the blocks, in the cellars. The very process of printing was quite complicated. Now, starting from the beginning, it was difficult to find a house or an apartment in which people could be trusted. The smell of paint was conspicuous and spread in the whole neighborhood. Secondly, it was necessary to prepare special plates with text that were later embossed on paper. They were designed for 100 or 150 copies, however efficient printers were able to obtain from each of them several thousand copies. Printing devices were also not perfect. Before first copiers were brought to Poland, people printed on different devices they made by themselves. These devices usually consisted of a very peculiar elements. Planks, a wooden frame, a roller from a washing machine, flannel pads. Printing paint was made of oil or dried polishing paste. The result was seldom satisfactory. The print was blurred, faint, minuscule letters printed for maximum use of space merged into one. Apart from that, the printed sheets had to be dried. Initially, people left them on furniture anywhere in the house or hung like laundry on strings. More gifted printers assembled electrical dryers. Later, single sheets of paper had to be laboriously put together into a uniform publication. At that time, the printers had to destroy test copies and the remaining paper so as not to leave any traces behind. Crime evidence was buried, burnt, or thrown to a river. Throwing out such litter to public bins was absolutely forbidden, as this could expose people to reprisals and denounce the publishing house. The production cycle was also far from typical, as secrecy had to be maintained. The printing crew locked themselves in one place for several days, working 24/7 on shifts, so as not to cause unnecessary commotion by going in and out of the apartment. Ready publications were transported to a different, safer place. Then a complicated network of distribution was created. Independent publications were becoming more and more popular and available. Of course, the authorities zealously persecuted underground publishers, but when some printing house was closed, new ones were created in its place. The entire process was completely confidential. Often neighbors did not know that the newspaper they got from a trusted person at work was printed in the neighboring flat. In a few meters, we shall reach a large junction with traffic lights. That is the end of Krakowskie Przedmieście and the beginning of Aleje Radwawickie. We shall cross the road at the traffic lights and go ahead in the direction of the city campus. However, if we turned left over there, we would come to a modest little house with a very interesting history. Anyway, let's go straight. At the end of the 1980s, the communists were aware that they were no longer able to control all areas of social life. They allowed, in a limited manner, independent organizations to operate. Two organizations were assigned to one tiny building. The plan, however, was very cunning. The authorities decided to confront two completely different organizations, an independence organization and Lublin anarchists. The authorities hoped that ideological differences would result in a great disagreement, and instead of a struggle against the communists, both organizations would attack each other. The outcome was actually exactly the opposite. The independent organization rapidly reached understanding with Lublin anarchists. What is more, they started to organize different manifestations against the authorities together. Both groups accepted the fact that differences between them were considerable. However, their largest enemy was the communist authority and lack of democracy in Poland. And this way, the communists, instead of improving their situation, aggravated it even more. Now pass the junction and go straight towards the city campus. Look right in the direction of a little neo-Gothic building with spires. Once the house belonged to the park gardener. It was built from bricks from the dissembled church foundations which we saw in the old town. The story I told you a moment ago proves that forms of opposition were diversified. Anti-communist opposition was very diverse and each group had a different idea on what Poland should look like. Not all members of the opposition were connected with the Catholic Church. They weren't all ardent opponents of the communist ideology. They weren't all laborers or intellectuals. Often their activities start within an impulse against destitution. For example, from the lack of basic fruit products in stores that made people irritated, furious, and then, in consequence, made them go on a strike. And this later evolved into their commitment to political matters. Anyway, let's move on. We are already on Aleje Radwawickie. In a moment, on the right side, you shall see an impressive edifice among the greenery. This is the Medical University of Lublin, but it has not been in this place for long. The building opened on the 15th of October 1951. The designer was Czesław Doria Dernałowicz, one of the most known Lublin architects. It was constructed in a Lublin park, the Saski Garden. This was for almost 40 years the headquarters of Polish communist authorities, Polska Zjednoczona Partia Robotnicza, the Polish United Workers' Party. This was a frequent stage of public demonstrations that moved from Plac Litewski, the Litewski Square, when the militia failed to suppress them. The building, in a sense, was a symbol of the detested authority. Activists from the independence organizations and anarchists I told you about a minute ago once took the building over and occupied it illegally for some time. But from the very beginning, the building on the Voivodeship Committee raised controversies. It is said that immediately after its completion, the building was visited by Bolesław Bierut, first president of Communist Poland, who came from Lublin. When he saw that the party built their headquarters in his favorite park, he was furious. Bierut was an intriguing person. Polish communists wanted people to worship him like Stalin. His portraits and busts were everywhere. Bierut, like Stalin, was mostly portrayed surrounded by smiling children and wild animals. He even used to have a doe. What's interesting, in the years of Stalinism, many outstanding Polish poets or writers praised Stalin in their works. Let's go along Aleje Racławickie. One more thing, look to the left. Behind the wooden fence full of posters, you will see a large, not completed building. This is Teatr Budowie, the theatre under construction. This theatre is a legendary and exceptional work. Construction of a new theatre in Lublin started in 1974. It was discontinued for 2 years due to lack of money and conception how to finance the tremendous facility in the future. In the 80s and at the beginning of the 90s, the budget money was spent mainly on maintenance and protection of the gigantic building. The construction started for good in the second half of the 1990s, when the theatre began to bring profit from letting its rooms to various companies. There were as many planned dates of completion of the construction as the ideas on what exactly should become of the theatre. What was the result? You can see for yourself. But since I already mentioned the theatre, as you go ahead, I will tell you something about the theatres that are a very significant element of Lublin. The most dedicated readers of underground publications were young people, students, who have always been a numerous group in Lublin. Their passion for reading rapidly turned into practical activity. First independent avant-garde young student theatres were created. It began as early as in the 1950s, when first stand-up comedy groups were founded. Subsequent decades resulted in creation of Chatka Żaka, the center of student culture that accommodated any independent student activities, including the theaters. This was the beginning of different cultural events and discussions. Lublin started to host student theaters from all parts of Poland and Europe. In the 1970s, Lublin is one of the most well-known theater centers in Poland. At that time, Provisorium, Scena 6, and the Grupa Chwilowa are established. They all perform plays that refer to the communist reality they are very critical of. They also show illusions of the system and the communist methods of debasing people. They are all eventually subject to strict censorship and have to face Służba Bezpieczeństwa, or SB, the internal communist intelligence agency that is trying to reach the group leaders. Inspiration comes from the work of Czesław Miłosz, Witold Gombrowicz, Albert Camus, and the works are all banned in Poland. The martial law suppresses the theatre's activity for a short time. After a few months, new plays are produced. This time, the inspiration comes from the personal experience, detention, internment, beatings. At the same time, a problem arises. The rector of the Maria Kiri Skłodowska University, managing Chatka Żaka, is forced to expel the theatres. The theatres, deprived of any place to continue their activity, still try to perform. But avant-garde theatres in Lublin are not only related to students and Chatka Żaka. In 1977, in a village near Lublin, Gardzienice Theatre, initiated by Włodzimierz Staniewski, is opened, currently one of the most important experimental theatres in the world. The obvious inspiration for Gardzienice was traditional folk culture. The group was traveling first around Poland and later around the world to give its new art the quality inspired by meetings with people, travels, rehearsals and performances. Apart from Gardzienice, the second world-famous theatre is an avant-garde Lublin Scena Plastyczna of the Catholic University of Lublin, created and managed by Leszek Mondzik. It has existed since 1969. A characteristic feature of this theatre is that the performances are silent. Everything is based on movement, light, stage design and sound. And thus, we are reaching the Catholic University of Lublin. You will see it in a moment on the left side. If the door is open, you can go inside through the corridor and go to the courtyard. If not, stand on the steps for a moment. At the same time, the university, as the only university in Lublin, accepted students expelled from other universities on the basis of oppositionist activity, participation in rallies and protests. In spite of the fact that in 1944 the second university was established in Lublin, the significance of the Catholic University of Lublin was not diminished. People from all over Poland arrived here to study, attracted by the lack of the communist propaganda and eager to meet respected professors. On the courtyard in front of you, you can see a monument showing two figures. These are Cardinal Stefan Wyszyński and Karol Wojtyła, the future pope who lectured in this very building. When I'm telling you about the contemporary history of Poland and changes our country went through, I must emphasize the role of John Paul II. As I have already mentioned, society was losing their trust in the communist authorities. The number of underground organizations was constantly growing. They plotted against the authorities, created alternative reality. However, because everything was clandestine, people were not able to assess the scale of their activity. Often members of families were unaware of the mutual involvement in independent initiatives. It could happen that a father was a printer, the mother distributed the press, and the son actively participated in independent scouts movement. Now let us return in front of the building. Only when Karol Wojtyła was elected the Pope and visited Poland in 1979, society opened their eyes. The scale of the movement was easy to be seen when millions of people gathered on the masses. It is worth adding that oppositional activity in Poland was often equivalent to religious commitment. Religious banners with Virgin Mary's image accompanied independence postulates. Soon afterwards, 10 million Poles joined the solidarity. They were no longer afraid to be in a minority. Let's come back to the steps in front of the building. I will tell you one more story. When Wojtyła lectured here, he often got involved in heated discussions with Professor Albert Krompiec, later rector of the Catholic University of Lublin. They tended to disagree over the key theological issues. Krompiec used to come to Wojtyła's lectures and attack him with biting remarks. When, after years, already as Pope John Paul II, Wojtyła came to the Catholic University of Lublin, during the official welcome and meeting with the academic staff, he whispered in his opponent's ear, "And who was right?" This is even more significant as the Catholic Church professes the doctrine of papal infallibility. Let's go down the steps and turn left. We are on our way to another Lublin university, the Maria Kiri Skłodowska University. Let's continue for about 100 meters through Aleje Racławickie and then turn left to Łopacińskiego Street. The second university had a completely different past than the Catholic University. In 1944, the communists establishing their rule in Lublin decided to diminish the Catholic University's influences and founded their own university that was to take over. They constructed a grand institution with massive lecture rooms and a great campus. They introduced new faculties and tried to popularize their ideas among the students. However, there again occurred an ironic twist of events. As was the case with laborers favored by the authority, also students quickly opened their eyes and turned away from them. Together with the students from other universities, they organized strikes, demonstrations, and sometimes they even occupied whole buildings. They protested against lack of freedom of expression, gatherings, or scientific research. They wanted people to enjoy freedom of academic research, create their own associations, issue newspapers, perform plays. In a moment we shall turn left to Łopacińskiego Street and we will continue straight on. On the left we are passing the monument of a great poet of the Polish Romanticism, Cyprian Kamil Norwid. He was a tragic figure. Forced to leave his motherland, he never accepted his fate as a political exile. He died in poverty in a Paris shelter in 1883. Norwid's poetry definitely cannot be seen as melancholic, nostalgic and pompous verses. His approach to literature and readers was exceptionally avant-garde. On the left side, we are passing a complex building of the Catholic University of Lublin. For years, the university had been located in modest and narrow rooms of the old edifice. For years, the university was struggling against the authorities on the one hand and with financial problems on the other. This was a serious obstacle in implementation of the planned investments. Eventually, several years ago, a great building, which we are passing at the moment, was opened. Now most classes are held here. Nevertheless, some students and lecturers still miss the cramped rooms of the former monastery with their special ambience. What's interesting, once a year in all Polish churches, people give offering for the development of this university. We have just entered the students' area of the city. This is a good moment to say a few words about the contemporary times and challenges the city is facing. As you probably know, Lublin is not an industrial city, though in the times of the Polish People's Republic there were several attempts to establish some industrial plants here. Great plants went bankrupt very soon due to their lack of efficiency. In Lublin's vicinity, there are fields and forests. At the same time, the city lies on the borderline of the European Union. For many people, these particular characteristics make it an unusual city, the city which links East and West, a place where they can meet. The city's future is science and culture, also in its less popular forms, the beginnings of which I have already mentioned. Such opinions are gaining more and more popularity. The city should attempt to capitalize on the students' potential, culture and history. One of the many actions in this field is Lublin's attempt to get the title of the European Capital of Culture. In 2016, the city's authorities want to welcome people from the whole Europe to enjoy multiculturalism, modern theatre, animation activities. The guests would bring new ideas which would inspire local activities. Many people claim that the title is a great opportunity for the development of the city, cultural and spatial. Now turn slightly left. Unfortunately, though many speak of the city's multiculturalism, looking at Lublin now it is hard to agree with them. In fact, multiculturalism, interaction of people speaking different languages and professing different religions, disappeared together with the Second World War and the communist regime. Today, a small number of students from abroad cannot fill this void and make Lublin a genuinely multicultural city. However, looking at the development of other European countries, we should hopefully look into the future. We have reached a large junction. Turn right. In a moment on the left, you shall see the main square of the Maria Curie-Skłodowska University and the monument of its patron, Maria Curie-Skłodowska. It is worth adding that this is the only state university in Poland with a female patron. She was an extraordinary person, born in 1867 in Warsaw. In 1891, as the first woman in history, she passed entry examinations to the Department of Physics and Chemistry at Sorbonne. Her greatest achievements include the radiation theory, techniques of radioactive isotope extraction, and discovering two elements, radium and polonium. She supervised the first research on cancer treatment by means of radiation. She was awarded the Nobel Prize for Scientific Achievements twice, for the first time in 1903 in the field of physics, for her research on radiation phenomenon, and in 1911 in chemistry, for extraction of pure radium. Up to this day, she remains the only woman who was awarded the Nobel Prize twice. Skłodowska, as the only person in history, was honored with the prize in two different fields of study. Here we shall finish our walk. This was only an outline of the complex history of the city. I have shown you only several selected places, I've told you a few anecdotes. I hope that I have managed to show you a piece of what is called the Lublin state of mind. I have presented you with the twisted story of the city and its inhabitants. I hope that you will now feel more at home walking the streets of our city, visiting places so far unknown to you. Now you can go to the university square stretching on the left side and take a rest on a bench.